The blunderbuss is back. Yes, Australia's most popular bus, on which to discuss leadership failure, is back in action. The bus has been in the garage getting turbocharged and now back on the road for season six. Once again, we'll be driving all over Australia, meeting some fantastic leaders who will share some painfully honest stories about their moments of failure and what they've learned. The Blunderbus has been downloaded over 6,000 times, making it the world's most popular podcast about leadership failure recorded on a bus. You've probably worked out by now that the magic secret when it comes to failure is the ability to reflect on mistakes and learn. And that's what I do in my work as a pastoral supervisor, which I do through my organization, Generation Leadership. So if you're looking for a pastoral supervisor to help you reflect on your work and ministry practice, I currently have some openings. So go to my website, generationleadership.com.au, to find out more. I'd love to work with you and provide a safe place to reflect on what you are currently doing and what you can learn. So check it out. Today, the Blunderbus has driven into the inner city of Sydney to Surry Hills. And we're talking to Karina Kraminski, co-director of Neighbourhood Matters, pastor, missiologist, and really nice person. Hi, Karina. Welcome on the bus.
Hi, Ed. Great to see you.
Yeah, great to have you here. Man, it's hard to park a bus in Surry Hills.
It's very hard in Surry Hills, and you will only get maximum 1 hour parking.
I know. We've got to talk really, really quickly because I'm feeding coins in and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. But thank you. Thank you for being on the bus today. Karina, you've done a lot of things in the leadership space. Any examples of leadership failure that you could possibly think of?
Yeah, thinking about this, I think one of the main things that really stand out for me now as I reflect back on my period, particularly as senior pastor of a church, I've reflected a lot on that season in my life. And one of the main things I think that really struggled with was prioritizing relationships over programs. I was very, very program driven.
Wow, that's interesting because you've always struck me as a very relational person.
Yep. I know, but there's something inside of me that's so driven. Really? And I think in the space of a church context, and particularly at that time where, you know, when I was pastoring, Bill Hybels was all the rage, Rick Warren.
Right. Yeah, right.
Purpose-driven church.
Purpose-driven. The word driven is in the title.
Exactly, driven and purpose and focus and, you know, it was all about really just, putting together programs that would maximize your church for growth.
Right.
And so I got caught up in that cycle, I think, as a young pastor.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, like, programs, not bad things. I mean, we have them, right? They're kind of just organized things in a way. I mean, what's your reflection on that?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing I've been thinking about as well. There's nothing wrong with programs. Like even here in Surry Hills, God did a lot of change in my heart, and instead of planting a church, he told me just to love the people. So I moved into this area wanting to, you know, be focused, plant a church. I had the strategy. I had everything ready, and God said, don't plant a church. Just love the people. And so that's what I've been doing. But even in that context, I have run a few programs, and they've done quite well, actually. We ran a program called the Happiness Lab where people came to the neighbourhood centre and learn about what it meant to, you know, live a meaningful life. So there's nothing wrong with programs, but it's just what's behind that. What's the priority behind that? Is it to grow a church? Is it to grow an organisation? Or is it to grow people? Is it to connect with people? And that's what God was really teaching me, even in my period here in Surry Hills.
Mm. Something about being and doing as well, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and there's always the two. We are people who have to work through our identity, but also through that identity comes, you know, what we do. And so it's both. It's always both. But I think for me, you know, there was this desire for success, this desire for being seen as somebody who leads a church of, you know, 500 and there's a lot of pressure, I think, at that time on me, and particularly I think being female.
I was just about to ask you about this, like what's the particularity of that?
Well, so I really stood out back then as a female senior pastor in my denomination, and so there's more pressure on you to succeed. You don't want to be the woman who fails and who is, you know, lets down the team in a sense. And so there's a lot of expectation on you. And women, as we know, are judged more harshly. Yes. And so you've got to try harder. And so, there was definitely that in me as well. I've got to be this woman who is already standing out, who is competent and who achieves and who does really well. And, you know, when I was going through all this, I didn't actually feel it so much as when I stepped out that I began to feel like, wow, that was a lot of expectation that I was placing on myself and that I think others were placing on me as well.
Yeah. So, Karina, going back to that time when you were in a pastor role, was there a specific kind of, you know, time of failure as you reflect on it now, or more generalized? How would you describe that?
Yeah, I think with pastoral care, I think when I was pastoring at the time, there was a very popular belief, and the belief was that if you're a pioneer or if you're a leader, you don't do the pastoral care. You leave that to somebody else.
Right.
You employ a pastoral care pastor to do that. That's not your responsibility. And I was kind of trained in that school of thought from previous ministers, but also the culture of the time was kind of telling us that.
Yeah.
And so I lived that out. I was just the leader. I was just the one who cast the vision, and I sourced out pastoral care to a team member.
Right.
And, you know, that was fine. But the congregation, I think, wasn't able to relate to me as well. And there was a bit of a relationship gap.
Yeah.
And that sort of tempered, in a sense, what I could do in terms of casting vision and getting people on board, because there was always a bit of a distance. So in all the things I did, like, you know, leading church towards a particular outcome, even running these programs, there was always a little bit of a distance, I think, there, because I wasn't the one doing the care. And I still remember this one lovely lady coming to my office with some cake, actually. And she sat down and she shared cake with me that she had made. And she basically said to me, "Karina, you really need to just start calling people up on the phone and just have a chat with them."
Wow.
And back then I thought, oh, goodness, that's so old school. That's so old fashioned. Like, who does that these days? You know, if you're a leader, you're too busy to do that sort of thing. And I sort of, you know, brushed that to the side and thought, oh, that's lovely. I got some cake. That's wonderful.
Thanks for the cake.
See you later. That's right. It was great cake. But then now I reflect back on it, I think, you know what?
She was right.
She was right.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't a leader be doing pastoral care? You know, it's not great. And even now, working in the neighbourhood, you know, being an urban missionary in a sense, it's all pastoral care.
Yeah.
It's leading, but it's catching up with people one-on-one in my neighbourhood, in this parish, where people don't know God, yet they want to have spiritual conversations. And I'm having cups of tea with people constantly. And so it's kind of like God's going, "You're doing pastoral care, ha ha."
Gotcha.
In the neighborhood.
and yeah, going back to, you know, where you were, that was a pretty big church from my understanding. And so, like, how, one of the issues that we talk on the bus about a fair bit is burnout and people feeling overwhelmed and having too much to do, and the expectations of great preacher, you know, great pastoral care, a great, you know, vision setter. You know, how do you manage that? Because you can't do everything. It's not all about the pastor.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it was about managing my own expectations that I placed on myself. But it's not just that. It's also the expectations that the congregation places on you and that the denomination places on you as well. And it's always a particular context and a particular culture that you're in. So you not only have to change your own expectations, but you've got to adjust other people's expectations as well. So teaching the congregation that it's okay for a pastor to take a break or to do other things. And, you know, it's culture change that you've got to engage in as well, not only thinking about, okay, what do I want and what do I need? Because it works both ways and they both reinforce each other. And I definitely experienced burnout. And for me, having that pastor role or the minister role, in the end, I kind of found it a bit of a dehumanizing experience.
Wow.
In the sense that it was a role that I took on, and people just saw the role and didn't see the human behind it. Now, once again, that could be because I was putting barriers up towards relationship. But I also think people see a minister a particular way, you know, the holy one or perfect or whatever that might be. And that creates some distance as well and causes you to, yeah, be less human in a way. I know that's kind of a drastic way of saying it, but I found it a little bit dehumanizing. Just having that.
Yeah. What strikes me is, you know, what the issue of trust, in a sense, like, you know, if you want to be a visionary leader, you're asking people, trust me, you know, this is where I think we need to go or whatever. But if people feel they don't know you or they haven't experienced you in other settings or whatever, there's the possibility that they don't trust because they don't know who you are or haven't seen you do those kind of things.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Trust is so important. I mean, you know, I never did anything to break that trust.
So that's
obviously important. But it's just, yeah, again, it's that building of relationship. It's spending time with people. And you know, one thing that I've learned is that God goes a lot slower than we go in general. You know,
yes.
as church leaders, we have the programs. We were a very, very busy church.
Yes.
And you know, God goes a lot slower. And he wants us to build those relationships to create that authenticity and that trust and that healing for ourselves as well. And so, yeah, that's one thing that has stood out for me as well, changing the expectations in the congregation in terms of how fast we go or what we achieve. We might not achieve so much in a particular frame of time. We have to go slower if we're actually going to learn to trust one another, relate to one another, and just be family together, be friends together.
Yeah, it also strikes me too that a number of the things that we're talking about come out of the sort of, you know, US mega church type culture. And in recent times, we've just seen horrendous, you know, examples of the cost of that, you know, and the way it's destroyed people and the way that people have acted. We're seeing that all the time. I imagine there's a kind of generalized culture. There was a generalized culture around. Megachurch type things at a particular point in time. I guess you were influenced by that too.
Yeah, I mean, we were just 5 minutes away from a megachurch, and and so that made it difficult as well because there was always a sense of comparison. You know, why are they? They're only 5 minutes away, and yet they are doing so well, and we're doing okay. And so there's that mentality, you know, the bigger, the better.
Yeah.
And now, only now we see, because when was I pastoring? Over 10 years ago. And only now do we see the consequences of leading a church that's all about size, it's all about growth, it's all about being driven. And you see the cracks now. You see the cracks in the leadership.
Yes.
The loss of humanity, you know, the beautiful nature of people gets lost in just that busyness and that programmatic and that driven nature. So it's interesting for me now to watch that we as a church looked to the mega church as this is where we want to get to. And now I look at that and I think, wow, you know, we were so wrong. There were so many things going on that we didn't know about and they're all coming up now.
Yes, we see the cost in a way, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. And the problems with the leadership structure, that lack of accountability and the emphasis on this one or two, you know, charismatic leaders where, as you were saying, everything is put on those leaders and the burden gets put on them and they're put on a platform.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you're put on a platform, you only really have one way to go in the end.
Yeah.
You cannot live up to people's expectations completely in the end.
Yeah. So what's changed? You've alluded to this, but what's changed about your ministry practice now? It's a very different kind of ministry that you're in now.
Yeah, I think the main way I'd describe it is it's less compartmentalized.
Yes.
So one thing that, you know, being program driven does is you compartmentalize your life. You do ministry and then you live the rest of your life. And so that's kind of changed for me. So now I wake up in the morning and I think, okay, God, what do you have in store for me? And my life is my ministry. It's just about connecting with people, relating with people, getting to know people. Occasionally, yes, running certain programs if they come from the ground up, if that's what the relationships that I'm connecting with, that's what they want, that's what's going to eventuate. But I don't put those programs onto people anymore and say, okay, these are the hoops that you've got to jump through for your discipleship process. Now, for me, discipleship is very much a way of life kind of thing. So it's not a compartment anymore. It's just something that I live out. And interestingly, I feel like a lot of people are wrestling with this question. How do we just be disciples rather than run programs to make disciples? How do we just live this way of life that is a way of discipleship and go on that journey, walking with Jesus and one another?
I think a lot of us, I think COVID sped this process up, but I think, you know, my sense is that a lot of people in ministry and pastors and so on are asking the question, you know, I do all this stuff, you know, for people or whatever on Sunday morning. To what extent does it actually help people be better followers of Jesus? And there is no necessary correlation between, you know, the incredible stuff we're doing on Sunday, whether that's your great, you know, evangelical 40-minute sermon or whether it's your great, you know, contemporary guitar solos and smoke and whatever, you know, there's no necessary correlation between your great Sunday morning experience and people being better followers of Jesus. I think it's been a real big challenge for people.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And you know what? Young adults are really picking this up, which is what I'm discovering, that they are really wrestling with that dissonance of coming to church, hearing this great sermon, experiencing great worship, you know, lifting their hands up in praise, having a great sometimes worship experience. But then they go back to their universities and their workplaces and they can't integrate. Right. They can't integrate what has happened in church with what they're seeing in their unis or what they're seeing in their workplaces.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that young adults these days, I think, are moving away from the church, that dissonance. That there's this disparity that they don't quite know how to connect the two worlds that they're living in. How do I be a Christ follower in the workplace? It doesn't only mean evangelizing my workmates.
No.
It means living a Christ-like life, discerning the presence of God, not only in the church, but in my workplace as well. And so that's what I'm finding really interesting about young adults these days. And really sad to think that they're wrestling with this, and it's one of the reasons that they're walking away from the church. They're not walking away from God, but they're walking away from the church.
No, I think it's the moment that we're in, isn't it? A lot of people are, you know, still prepared to say yes to Jesus, but have a lot of questions around the church in its various guises and forms. So, Karina, what have you learned about leadership failure? What place do you think leadership failure plays in the role and life of a leader?
I think it has a lot to do with aging, getting older, getting some experience. And as you move on in life and you walk through those different faith progressions, I think if you're self-aware and you're self-reflective, you can look back on those failures and find some redemption and find some hope. So I've been thinking a lot recently about what it means to age well.
Oh, wow.
And one thing I think it means is looking back on some of those times, some of those seasons, and not getting bitter about those times, not getting resentful, not getting regretful, but really trying to find some redemption in that and seeing the way that God was working in those times anyway, and has made you the person that you are today, learning from those difficulties and struggles and failures.
Were there any aids to reflection for you? You know, what you were talking about at the end was your ability to reflect. So how did you develop reflective ability?
I had a spiritual director.
Yeah.
So my spiritual director was excellent. I had a mentor for a very long time and that was very helpful as well. But this spiritual director was able to get to the point of things and just really asked me some very, very confronting, deep questions that just got to the core of what was going on. And that helped me to reflect and helped me to become a more contemplative person.
Yes.
And as I get older, that's what's happening as well. I'm becoming more reflective and more contemplative and thinking about the fact that stillness is so important when it comes to reflecting about the past.
Yeah.
And so, spiritual direction was excellent.
Mm. Yeah, you can't, I think, really do reflection quickly. You know, it's by definition a slow kind of process.
Yeah.
You can't just, you know, smash it out.
And it's layers.
And layers, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's layers. It's once and you think, oh, wow, yeah, absolutely, that's so true. And then you keep going and you find another layer and you think, oh, actually, I have to go deeper with that issue. There's actually more to work through there. And so, yeah, you're never there, are you? And still wrestling with some of that stuff. Like, there's still things in me where sometimes I'm way too driven and I want an outcome when it's just not going to happen and I have to pull back. A lot of my work that I do now in Surry Hills is very relationship-based and I just can't drive an outcome. I have to sit with a person and wait and talk and go slowly. And so there's still that in me. And so it doesn't, you know, thinking about failures doesn't mean that, you're completely perfect now. You still wrestle. I still wrestle with some of that stuff. But definitely, there's redemption in that.
Thanks to Karina Kraminski for sharing about her leadership journey and what she has learned. And thanks to you for being part of the Blunderbus journey. If you would like to subscribe and rate the Blunderbus, it actually helps more people know about it. And greetings to our listeners in Washington, Virginia and Culver City, California. A big shout out to you. Go to our website at www.generationleadership.com.au to find out more about pastoral supervision. And we'll see you next time on the Blunderbus.